Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Belinda, and along with Jarlene Spinks, we will be presenting on the Young Deadly Free Youth Peer Education Program. We'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we meet today and pay our respects to elders past and present. Okay, the Young Deadly Free Youth Peer Education Program was piloted in 2017 to 2019 in remote and very remote communities to increase awareness of STIs and BBVs, promote prevention, increase the uptake of STI and BBV testing, and help foster healthy relationships among Aboriginal young people aged between 16 and 29 years. The peer education program was one component of the larger Young Deadly Free project, which Amanda was talking about, and Siren at Curtin University were commissioned to undertake an independent evaluation of key activities of the YDF project, including the youth peer education program. So this slide is a great visual of the geographical spread of the YDF Youth Peer Education Program. The program was implemented in 15 communities across Western Australia, the Northern Territory, South Australia and Queensland. We had six communities in WA, four in the Northern Territory, two in South Australia and three in Queensland. Six regional coordinators were employed to implement the program in each state and territory. Among the responsibilities of the regional coordinators was the recruitment and training of young people as peer educators. Young people who met the eligibility criteria completed 15 hours of peer educator training, which focused on anatomy and conception, STI and BBV transmission, testing and harm reduction, as well as sex and the law. The peer educators received a toolkit which included resources and activities on the topics that they covered in their training, and they used these toolkits to run three community education sessions with small groups of young people from their community, and they were supported to do so by their regional coordinator. The evaluation of the Young Deadly Free Youth Peer Education Program examined the uptake, reach and impact of the program for young people aged 16 to 29. The evaluation utilised a mixed methods research design to capitalise on the strengths of both quantitative and qualitative research approaches, including more culturally appropriate evaluation methods and to accommodate the lower literacy levels among some of the participants. Data was collected using a knowledge survey. This was a self-complete paper-based survey that assessed four domains, including knowledge, health service utilisation, behavioural intentions and attitudes about STIs and BBVs. And the survey was administered by the regional coordinators to the peer educators pre and post training and to the young people attending the community education sessions pre and post session. The regional coordinators also conducted interviews with some of the trained peer educators post-training, and they also facilitated focus groups with small groups of young people following their participation in a community education session. So all in all, 97 Aboriginal young people trained as peer educators. There were 52 males and 45 females, and the mean age was 21. And there were 426 young people aged between 16 and 29 who attended a community education session facilitated by a trained youth peer educator. Now, due to the scale of the program and also the evaluation, we've just selected a few key findings to share with you today from the young people who attended the community education sessions. So knowledge surveys were completed by the young people prior to the community education session, so there were 174 completed, and post-session, of which there were 172. What we found was that there was a general increase from pre to post survey in the proportion of respondents answering questions correctly or agreeing with the statements across all the survey domains. There was demonstrated knowledge gains from pre to post survey, with increases in the proportion of correct responses reported across each of the 13 knowledge questions. Knowledge remained limited post survey for gonorrhea and trichomonas, however, so there was less than 40% of respondents correctly answering these questions. There were marginal differences between men and women in terms of the proportion of correct responses to each of the knowledge questions, but there were differences among the age groups, with those aged 23 years and older having the highest proportion of correct responses in both the pre and the post surveys. Young people most commonly reported accessing STI and BBV advice from Aboriginal medical services, and Aboriginal medical services were also the most frequented location for an STI or BBV test. So this really underscores the important role of AMSs in sexual health in remote Aboriginal communities. In the post-survey, 64.5% of the respondents indicated they had been tested for an STI, but a much lower proportion reported being tested for a BBV. There was little variation when we compared the pre and post responses across the genders, although a slightly higher proportion of females reported being tested for an STI when compared with males. The findings did show, however, that age is related to STI testing, with those aged 23 years and older significantly more likely to have been tested for an STI than those aged 16 to 18 years, and this was in both the pre and the post-survey samples. Just over one quarter of the pre-survey respondents intended to test for an STI or BBV in the next 3 months. This increased post-survey to over one third. There was a negligible difference between men and women in terms of their intention to get an STI or BBV test. However, age was shown to be related to intention to test, with those aged 19 to 22 years and those aged 23 years and older significantly more likely to intend to get an STI or BBV test in the next 3 months than those aged 16 to 18 years. Perhaps the most important thing to note on this slide is that almost 40% of the respondents were concerned about the shame and privacy of STI testing, and this proportion remained relatively stable from pre to post survey. So it really highlights the entrenched stigmatisation of STIs in remote Aboriginal communities. And in terms of BBVs, the proportion of respondents agreeing with the statements was less than the proportions reported for the STI statements, which suggests that knowledge on this topic is perhaps more limited. But what is encouraging to note is that there were increases in the proportion of people agreeing with each of the BBV statements from the pre to the post survey. So it suggests that the community education sessions may have helped to enhance knowledge on this topic. So the... Okay, thank you. The YDF Peer Education Program was a large-scale program that presented multiple challenges, some of which Jarlene will briefly talk about, including how to address some of these issues if the program is run again in the future.
Hi, everyone. My name's Jarlene Spinks, and I was the regional coordinator for the Young Deadly Free Peer Education Program up at CAMHS. I'm just going to touch a bit about the challenges and future considerations. So perhaps the largest barrier was the sensitivity surrounding sexual health in Aboriginal culture. Sexual health is highly stigmatised, sometimes taboo topic associated with much shame in Aboriginal culture. This sensitivity created challenges in getting young people and the communities to engage with the program. Another cultural barrier that surfaced for some of us regional coordinators was sorry business. There were several instances in the course of the peer education program where peer educator sessions or community education sessions could not be conducted due to traditional ceremonies that take place after a death of a community member. So this contributed to the delays in the program's implementation. So the program should program's focus should be broadened with more of a holistic approach for health of young people and less focus on sexual health. This approach aligns with Aboriginal cultural views about health, well-being, and may be more readily accepted in Aboriginal communities. So there were difficulties with recruitment and retention of peer educators. Often remote communities had a limited number of suitably skilled young people, and sometimes suitably skilled young people were in demand for other works or projects. The retention of the trained peer educators were also challenging due to the transient nature of the population. It was also felt that expectations placed on peer educators to confidently conduct factual community education sessions on a sensitive topic with their peers was unrealistic. While us regional coordinators were aware of this because we were based far outside the YDF communities, we just couldn't support our trained peer educators the way we wanted or they needed us to. So it's recommended that on-site continued support is provided to the peer educators, either by a locally based regional coordinator or a trained educator support person. It's also recommended that the peer educator training include content on developing skills in group facilitation so that peer educators feel more confident when talking to a group of people. The inflexibility of peer education program design and the strict participation criteria were barriers, which might have stopped some people from participating in the program. A one size does not fit all in remote Aboriginal communities. So for future consideration, a less structured, more informal approach to peer education is recommended to account for the different needs of the participating communities. Also, age restrictions should be removed to ensure everyone can benefit from the information being shared. So there is great strength in having older generations involved in the program, for it reflects and respects the collective kinship system of Aboriginal culture and helps to enhance their knowledge and confidence in talking to young people about sexual health.